It's 6:16 here on the Talk of Gasoline Alley. Donald Davidson, Dave Wilson. You can email your questions to gasolinealley@wibc.com. Thanks to our friends at IQuest Quick Connect. Let's go to Howard. You're up on WIBC. Howard?
Yes. I wonder who that black driver was that I saw in 1950 at a race at Dayton, Ohio.
Joey Ray, probably.
Joey Ray. Okay.
It would have to, yeah, Joey. Have to be Joey Ray from Louisville.
The only black driver I'd ever seen, I think,
yeah,
in any of the races in those days. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
He was around for several years and a very nice guy. He's still around. But he raced AAA sprint cars for several years and never had very much success, but he was very popular with the other drivers.
There you go. Howard, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. It's 6:18. Let's head up to the news center and check in real quickly here with Miss Joanne Clues with some sky traffic. Joanne? Back with you now here on the Talk of Gasoline Alley, courtesy of our friends at Dreyer and Ryan Bolt. They are our hosts this month. Let's go back to the phones. Joe, you're up with Donald Davidson, Joe.
Yeah, Donald, I'm a big fan of Bobby Marshman's, and I was wondering if you could give me a rundown on his career. I'll hang up and listen to you on the radio.
Okay, sure. Well, that's brief at the Speedway. It was only four starts, and 1961 was the first year. He drove for two car owners, Eat Poover from Nashville or Memphis, I forget now, but somewhere, one of them Tennessee towns.
Yeah.
And he was seventh as a rookie in 61. Fifth and 62 from the outside of the front row. And then in 63 and 64, he drove for Lindsey Hopkins. And he dropped out running in the first 10 very late in the 63 race. I think he was like sixth at 194 laps or something like that, dropped out with the Econo car rental special. And then in 64, he drove a Lotus, one of the previous year's Lotuses, called the Pure Oil Firebird special. And almost every day, and it was a much longer practice period then. They practiced for like 2.5 weeks before he didn't get to qualifying. And almost every day, he would go faster and faster and faster, breaking the unofficial track record, which was 151 miles an hour. But by the time he got to the end of the second week, he was up like around 157, 158. And then on the morning of the first qualifying day, his crew had him on the stopwatches at 160. So he actually had the first unofficial 160 lap. And then when he went out, he probably overdrove, and he broke the records, but it wasn't what he wanted it to be. And I was there. That was my first year, and I remember him coming in after right at 157 and just shaking his head in disappointment as he came in, just as that's not going to do it. And so you thought, well, that may still end up being the pole. And, of course, Jim Clark knocked him off the pole. Then when the race started, Clark led at the start. Then we had the Sachs-McDonald accident, restart. And Bobby Marshman hung with Clark and then passed him. And then he started to build a lead. And I had a set of stopwatches that Dick McGeorge of Champion Spark Plug Company had given me. So I thought, well, let's try these things out. And I remember thinking, well, I must be making a mistake here because it looks like he's building a lead of 2.5 seconds a lap, and that's not possible. But he was. And he started last in the field, and he was probably half a minute ahead of Clark, maybe more, when he dropped out very early in the race, right at the 100-mile mark. And what had happened was he bottomed out trying to lap Johnny White. Well, he was successfully lapping Johnny White. But he got down not only below the yellow line, he actually got below the, he got down into the real rough stuff, down into the grass, and it ripped the oil plug from the oil tank.
Oh,
it drained all the oil. But he was having handling problems before that, but he was just like a man possessed. And I talked to Jack Beckley about it several times, and he said that his whole thing was he wanted a lap point. And he said we were trying to slow him down. And in fact, if you see the films of it, you see Beckley holding out the chalkboard that says, cool it.
Yeah.
I mean, they were starting to, you know, not only trying to slow him down, but it was, Jack was actually, they'd hold out the board saying, cool it. And he was actually waving his finger at him. But he wanted to
lap Floyd.
And anyway, he was a very nice guy. Little anecdote about the first year that he came, his father was a driver. George Marshman, which is actually was Bobby's name. He was George Robert Marshman, and they were from Pottstown, Pennsylvania. And he came looking for a ride in 61 and got discouraged and went home. And he obviously checked by several garages, and with Don Branson qualified middle of the front row, and with a second car, they'd not back up, but a second car available, they looked around for Bobby Marshman, and he'd already gone back to Pennsylvania. So they called him, and he came back again, and then qualified, started 33rd and finished 7th, which sounds great, but he wasn't very happy at the end because he just basically, he said, I didn't race anybody. I just sat out there and ran my own race, and attrition got me up there. Yeah. But he split the Rookie of the Year award with Parnelli Jones, and then he was successful in midgets some. He drove stock cars a little bit. He won a stock car race at Eldora, I believe it was. And then that might not be right. No, Springfield. I don't know. I think he won a midget race. A midget race one night, and then a stock car race at Springfield the next day, I think. But anyway, the sad thing was that at the end of the year, after the last race at Phoenix, he was testing for Ford Motor Company, had a crash, and they were still running gasoline, and that was the end of gasoline. And he sustained serious burns, and then I think he passed away 3 days later or something. And it was a very, very sad loss. He had a son who was just a baby. And at one time, the son was living in Japan teaching Russian to Japanese schoolchildren. And he's an American.
Oh, for crying out loud.
And a lot of people said, Bobby Marshman's son?
But,
great guy. And evidently a superstar of the future. In fact, this closing note, apparently people at Lotus were very keen on him, and when they were back in England, I read this quote in a book that apparently somebody said, well, you know, who is this Bobby Marshman? What's he like? And he said, well, he's sort of an American Jimmy Clark, which was a very high compliment.
Certainly. Most certainly. And, of course, you have now been faster than him.
I have ridden around the track faster than Bobby Marshman drove.
There you go.
Yes.
6:28, we'll be right back. Lots more of the talk at Gasoline Alley after news. All right, Joe, thank you very much. Back to the talk at Gasoline Alley live at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The Dryer and Reinbold Garage, our thanks to their fine hospitality. Our thanks also to iQuest Quick Connect email. You can email us at gasolinealley@wibc.com. Let's head to Terre Haute and speak with Bill. You're on WIBC with Donald Davidson. Bill?
Hey, good afternoon. Listen, I had a chance to see a race over the track in the fall of 1971. There were two events, one modern, one vintage, and they were about 10 laps long. And I know in the vintage race, I think it was won by Peter DiPaolo, and I think Harlan Fingler was in it. And I was just wondering if you remember some of the other veterans who were in that event.
Boy, you're throwing me for a loop here, because I know about the 10 lap specials with four cars, which were done several. In fact, it was funny. I've never been asked about this before, I don't think, except somebody asked the other night. So that's
right.
The second call this season, and I don't remember one before. I didn't come over. I do remember that Peter DiPaolo drove. It was the 1909 Buick, I believe. There's a number 34 Buick. And I think that they carried riding mechanics, so it might have been Carl Kaiser got in as the riding mechanic. Harlan Fengler very likely could have been involved. I don't know who the others were, so I don't even know where I could find that out.
Yeah, I think Emil Andres might have been there.
That's very possible, yes.
And Cliff Berger and Duke Nalen and maybe Maury Rose.
Oh, my.
Maury Rose would surprise me. Cliff Berger was living in the area at that time. He eventually moved to Florida, but he was for a while in he used to live on 16th Street, or he did for a while, just down from USAC. In fact, I used to walk when what's now the Speedway Convenient used to be the post office, and I used to walk down to the post office, and I would see Cliff Berger sitting on his porch reading a book and smoking a pipe, and he was at airport security at that time. So he was here in town. Now, Maury Rose, I would be surprised if he would come down for something like that, but he might have.
Yeah, well, I took pictures there, and I've got a beautiful silver number 22 and a big red number 17, and I think the car that Eddie Rickenbacker drove, 1914, was there.
The Duesenberg, number 10.
Yeah. And I noticed my dad had a stopwatch on him, and he said, man, they're really flying. They were smoking, and there was stuff falling off, and they were shimmying and shaking, and some of them were falling apart. And I thought, these old guys are going to get hurt. and Pat Vidan was out there, and he dropped the checkered flag, and it was over, and I thought, I've been telling people for years I got to see the Powell race. And all these guys, they said, no, you didn't. You're too young. But I said, by gosh, I'll call Donald Davis and ask him about that.
Well, I kind of let you down a little bit, but I do recall, I think I did see a picture of Peter in that 1909 Buick. So I will check up on that. You got my curiosity piqued.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks.
Bye. Let's check in with Mike. You're on WIBC with Donald Davidson. Mike.
Hi, Donald. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. I want to know about my ex-brother-in-law, Eddie Russo.
Oh, my goodness me.
Is he still alive?
Yes, he is. But I think he's living in Kenosha, Wisconsin, or maybe Milwaukee. They were from Kenosha.
Right.
I wish you'd give me a call at the office sometime because I'd be more than happy to do that. All right, please do that because I'd like to talk to you about him and I'll tell you some stories about him that I wouldn't tell on the air.
Smart.
But as far as the driving career was, 54, he drove the Federal Engineering Detroit Special. This won't take long. Incomplete attempt. 55, it was the Doc Zabruin Special and he finished 22nd. 56, he was in several cars in practice, didn't make the race. He was entered in the Jim Robbins Special that ended up Cliff Griffith finished 10th with. The Ballon Miracle Power Special, which was a streamliner, and the second Novi that he was going to try and qualify with his in the same team as his Uncle Paul. But he never went to the qualifying line. 57, he was in the Sclavi and Amar Special and was involved in an accident on the pace lap and was out, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay,
and then in
good,
58,
good
I'm sorry?
That's a good move.
Yeah, I know. And then in 58, the Sclavi and Amar Special, he went out to qualify, didn't take the flag. 59, he was made incomplete attempts with the Midwest Manufacturing Special. He was in several cars. He tried to qualify the Agaginium Special right as the track was closing, completed the run. Oh, the go-kart special for Ollie Prather was the other one he made an incomplete attempt in. The Agaginia special, he went the distance but wasn't fast enough to get in. And then finally in 1960, the go-kart special for Ollie Prather, he was involved in an accident and, in fact, lost an eye in the as a result of the accident. And he never drove again. He did own a midget for a while. And there's plenty I can tell you about him. He led a very colorful life off the racetrack. So you give me a call sometime and we'll talk about it.
I sure will.
In fact, if you're an ex-brother-in-law, just let's say you're one of several ex-brother-in-laws.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah. Mike, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 6:40, we'll come right back. John and Dayton, Philip, Leon, hang on. We'll have your calls on the Talk of Gasoline Alley right after this. 6:45, Talk of Gasoline Alley. Let's get back to it. Philip, you're up on WIBC with Donald Davidson.
Hey, good evening, guys. Real quick, actually it's two questions and then I'll hang up. I was curious why between 1911 and 1912, why the number of entries dropped so much, almost in half.
Yeah.
And two, there was a guy I just caught reading at one time about that, a guy named Huey Hughes. I think he was 12th in 1911 and like third the next year.
That's
then
correct.
Then he disappeared. And then I read a note that in 1914 he came back and blew up his motor showing off for a girl on this in the pit area. I didn't know if that was true, and I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
Okay, well, the second part first, I don't know that that's true. It was the car was called the Rayfield, and it was built in a town called Chrisman, Illinois. And they never went to the qualifying line with that car, so they did have mechanical trouble, but I don't think he blew it up trying to impress a girl. He may have. Huey Hughes is somebody I'd like to know more about. There's a lot of mystery about him. He was English. We do know that. His nickname was Lord Huey, and you see that he was born in London, but then also he was probably Welsh, and he married an American lady, but he was fatally injured in 1915. In 13, he was here and co-drove a car with Bob Berman. The other things that you said were correct. He was 12th in 1911 and 3rd in 1912 driving for Mercer, Trenton, New Jersey. And then in 1915, he drove, co-drove for the Maxwell team. He co-drove with Billy Carlson in one of the Ray Haroon team-managed Maxwells. But he lost his life at the end of the year in a rather unusual accident. I think it was Sheepshead Bay, New York. Anyway, he was out of the race, and he was just standing at the side of the track when a car, an out-of-control car, mowed him down. I mean, he'd been in the race, but was out of it. And I, you know, when I first heard he was fatally injured in a race, you just think it's Right. But it's not what we thought. Anyway, the reason, the first part of the question, there were 46 entries in the 1911 race, of which 44 arrived. In 1912, there were only, I think it ended up that there was 27. Now, I think there was 29 and a couple of withdrawals, but then it ended up there was only 27 actually arrived at the track, which 24 started. The entry fee was quite high in those days. It was $500, which sounds like nothing now, but right. At that time it was huge. I mean, it was down to, I think, 100 and a quarter during the Depression. But anyway, there was a number of... there are several reasons, actually. Most of the entries were manufacturers. They were automobile companies,
right.
Small automobile companies, and trying to get some notoriety to prove the worth of their cars,
vehicle, sure.
So that people would buy them. And so you had some teams probably thought that they were a little out of their league and didn't want to come back. Others thought, we don't need to go back. We've been there and shown that we can go 500 miles or whatever the distance that they completed was. And then, quite honestly, a lot of other companies just were going out of business. It was like dot-com companies. A lot of automobile companies, after the turn of the century, would only last a couple of years before they would go under or they would merge or be bought for 10 cents on the dollar. And so that's the reason why it dropped off considerably.
There you go. All right, sir. Thanks, Philip. We appreciate it. Let's head up to the news center now and check in this. 6:52 on 1070 WIBC, the talk of gasoline. Let's get back to your phone calls. Leon, you're up with Donald Davidson, sir.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Donald.
That's all right. Thank you.
I would like to know if you can remember who the main leading driver was at 500 between the late 30s, early 40s, and up to 48.
Well, that's a matter of somebody's opinion. Probably Wilbur Shaw had the best record during that period.
The person I'm thinking of had initials like AJ, but that was long before AJ's time, I know.
I don't know anybody using initials back then that was notable. What's your time frame again?
Up to 1948.
From the 30s?
Yeah, late 30s.
Rex Mays?
No, that isn't it.
Well, it would be Louis Meyer, except he wouldn't have been as late as 48. Wilbur Shaw had the best record, I think, in that period. Maury Rose, Ted Horn?
No, that don't sound like it either.
Okay.
The reason I'm asking you, I'm not trying to stump you, I'm just trying to... For my own benefit,
yeah,
1948, I was in Okinawa.
Uh-huh.
And I was driving a B-29 crew down to the station, or mm-hmm. to the flight line,
mm-hmm.
to leave. They were going on a run. And, of course, I only knew two speeds, stop and wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing that, and this is a rough road.
Yeah.
And the captain said to me, "Hey, AJ," or whatever the name was he used.
Barney? Was it for Barney Oldfield?
That might have been it.
Okay, a lot of people, that was a Barney Oldfield was much earlier, but it was a very, it was a standard line for a speed cop to pull somebody over and say, "Who do you think you are, Barney Oldfield?"
Yeah.
You think that was it?
Could have been. I can't remember now.
Okay.
Yeah. That sounds about right, though. But, Leon, thanks for your call, sir. We appreciate it. Let's try to get another one in. We'll head up to Racine, Wisconsin. We'll speak with Paul. You're on WIBC, Paul.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Fine.
Good. Donald, we've had a lot of Brazilian drivers in the field this year and in the past few years. What year did we have the most amount of foreign drivers from one particular country?
Oh, my goodness. Well... probably.
I would think it would be recently.
In 1995, I think there was like six or seven Brazilians at the track. And that would be Christian Fittipaldi. I'm not saying this is it, but probably. Christian Fittipaldi, Gilles de Ferran, who's Brazilian, although he's born in France and actually looks French. Raul Boissel. Andre Ribeiro, Marco Greco.
I forgot about him, yeah.
Yeah, Greco?
No, Andre Ribeiro.
Oh, yeah, I was, and I don't know, that's five. Fittipaldi? Who? No, he was Italian. I think there was six or seven, and I'm just not up on my Brazilian breakfast right
now. Yeah, six of them. Well, that's probably the most, but that's a bunch.
We'll give us some thought and give an answer tomorrow.
Thanks for your call, Scott. Sorry we didn't get to you too. Try to tomorrow, if you will. We'll be back more of the Talk of Gasoline Alley coming up tomorrow here at 6 o'clock. Stay tuned for the Network Indiana show if you're in a Network Indiana.
Marcy Ogujumin.
Well, yeah, there you go. If you're in a Network Indiana affiliate station, 800-603-MIKE. Indy Racing Weekly is up next for Dreyer Reinbold Garage. We appreciate their support. Thank you, Scott Johnston, Matt Hiblin, Donald Davidson. I'm Dave Wilson. Good night, everybody.